Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, live in Miami, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1, everybody from Jimmy Johnson to Russell Wilson will stop by our show today, the Miami Beach Ferris Wheel. Look at this city, 77 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. The storms moved out about 4 in the morning. Joy Taylor is joining me. It is Thursday. The week is flying by. I just bumped into a couple of minutes ago Christian McCaffrey, who is one of the really cool guys in the NFL. He was walking by the set. Stars are starting to file into the town. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. It feels like the Super Bowl is here now. Like the sun is out, starting to get crazy. There's stuff, all kinds of stuff
the
going on.
The crazies are coming down to South Beach. So let's start the show with this. So we have two types of quarterbacks in the NFL, the young, successful quarterbacks. There are two types. Now, there's a lot of types of quarterbacks in terms of height and arm and size and athleticism, but there are two types of young, successful quarterbacks in the NFL. There are the turtles. Okay, the turtles are Tom Brady. They're Aaron Rodgers. They're Jimmy Garoppolo. They're Kurt Warner. They're Steve Young. Maybe they have an early injury. They have to sit behind a star. Their career takes a little while to unfold. Those are the turtles of what Jimmy Garoppolo was certainly in that class. He sat behind Brady. He got injured, went to San Francisco, got dinged up. He's a turtle. Then there's also the other type of young, successful quarterbacks, the Hares. These are sensational, early success. Oh, my God, look at them run. Lamar, Patrick Mahomes, Carson Wentz, Dan Marino. Dak had some of this. Cam had some of this. The Hares, they're sensational either very soon or immediately. They jump through the TV set. They get the right coach early. They get the right scheme early. Two types of quarterbacks. Now, you would think, oh, man, I want to be the Hare. I'm not into the slow growth method of quarterbacks, but let me tell you the advantage to it. The advantage to being Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's why I like the Niners in this game, is because slow growth works in the NFL because you do not have the pressure. So with Patrick Mahomes, you have to pay him more early. You often have to pay him sooner. The owner and the GM have unrealistic expectations, which puts unbelievable pressure on a coach. Think about this. If Kyle Shanahan loses with Jimmy G Sunday, it changes no narrative. This is the slow build. You were supposed to lose. This offense is not built around Jimmy Garoppolo. But if Andy Reid, perhaps the best offensive coach in my lifetime outside of Bill Walsh, loses with Patrick Mahomes, I mean, you know, maybe we should wait one more year on Mahomes. We got to pay him now. There's a lot of pressure. Is Andy Reid the right guy? Maybe we don't have the right guy. There are two models that work for young, successful franchise quarterbacks. There is the slow growth model, Jimmy Garoppolo. Little choppy early, don't get into the right place for you, have to be moved. Aaron Rodgers had to sit for a while, didn't have a great first year as a starter. Kurt Warner, Steve Young, Brady had to, sit, and then he was led by the defense and Bill Belichick. And then there's the Comets and the Sensation and the Hares and Patrick Mahomes. Both can work, but the good thing is the slow growth model doesn't get unrealistic owners going crazy town upstairs. The GM doesn't feel the pressure to get and overpay for pieces for the superstar quarterback now because we got to win because the owner knows how good Mahomes is and we got to win it. If we don't win, we're going to get fired. Just think about this. Sunday, if the Chiefs lose, as ridiculous as this sounds, people will be saying, oh, is Andy Reid the right fit for Patrick Mahomes? The slow growth model, Garoppolo, if he loses, well, I mean, we're in this thing for the long term. I mean, Garoppolo's a baby. So Troy Aikman, like me, I'm all in on Garoppolo. I don't think he has the natural talent of Patrick Mahomes, but or a Russell Wilson or a Carson Wentz. But I'm all in on Garoppolo. I'm all in on the slow growth method. I'm all in on the Niners Sunday. And one of the reasons was because Shanahan and Belichick both fell in love with Jimmy G, and Troy Aikman talked about that.
If something were to happen to Tom Brady, he said that he felt that they could win with Jimmy Garoppolo. And when Bill Belichick says win, that doesn't mean go win week three. You know, I mean, that wins means win at all. So I thought it spoke volumes to the respect that he had for him.
Let me shift to this. So one of the big stories when the season ended in the NFL was Mike McCarthy, the former Green Bay Packer, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers' coach. You know, he got fired a year ago and kind of sat on the beach or in his basement and watched a bunch of football. And then the Dallas Cowboys hired him. And that was a big story. There's never been a coach in the history of the NFL that coached the Packers and then later coached the Cowboys. It's a big deal to coach one. This guy's coached both. And we know that I've been critical of Aaron Rodgers because I call him a bailer. He bails on coaches, he bails on plays, he bails on teammates, he's bailed on some family sometimes. He's a bailer. And those are cynical people. Years ago, I was talking to probably the wealthiest person I've ever talked to. And it was just one of those happenstance things. We were in the same spot for a while. And I was just asking him a bunch of questions. And I'm not talking making good money. I'm talking about, you know, net worth in the billions. And he said, you got to be optimistic. Cynical people don't become billionaires. You've got to be optimistic because real wealth, there are so many roadblocks, so many hurdles, so many failures to get there. And if you're a cynical person and a pessimistic person, you'll just quit. You'll just bail. You'll be like, this isn't going to work. It's too hard. He goes, you have to be optimistic. You have to see the light at the end of the tunnel. You have to believe your vision will work. It's very hard to be wealthy and cynical. And I like Dak Prescott because Dak Prescott is not cynical. Dak Prescott is optimistic. Dak Prescott is not a finger pointer. Dak Prescott asks, how do I make it better? You've never heard him once. And they've had a lot of chaos at Dallas in the last few years with Dak Prescott. Never points a finger. Ever. Not interested. Because he's optimistic. He'll persevere. And so he was asked about getting information on Mike McCarthy from Aaron Rodgers, who I view as cynical. And Dak said, I don't want to talk to Aaron Rodgers.
Are you the type of guy that will, like, call Aaron Rodgers just to be like, let me get a feel for my coach? Or no, I didn't think
no,
you would be.
No, not at all. I don't care to get a feel from somebody else off of their judgment or their relationships. I know relationships are completely individual, and I don't even want to warp my mind off of what somebody else thinks.
Another example of Dak using really good judgment. I don't love Dak's athletic ability. I don't love his arm. But I've said he shows me great judgment and great leadership. This is not a shot at Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron's cynical. Aaron can be a bailer. Dak isn't. Russell Wilson isn't. It is hard to have ultimate success long-term if you're pessimistic. The media is overly cynical. That's why there are very few wealthy media people. Dak's optimism is the right call here. I don't want to hear about bad experiences. Clean slate. I want McCarthy to walk in. I want to make my own judgments on him. I don't want to hear about your relationship because you and I are different. Another reason I may question Dak's talent, but I love him, the leadership qualities and the intangibles as a franchise quarterback.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So PFF judges every player and every coach. I think they judge every coordinator. And I don't rely exclusively on it. I watch the games. But I do think PFF does a really good job breaking down the minutia of football, simplifying it for us, you, me, the consumer. So you know I love Andy Reid, so it was a great pleasure this morning to read that Andy Reid was actually taking every play into account this year, voted, judged the best coach in the NFL. Now, I saw Sean Payton last night, and Sean is a legend. Sean walks around with that Super Bowl ring. There's a certain gravitas to Sean Payton, good-looking guy. Walks into a room, it's like, ooh, there's Sean Payton. But the difference between being a legend, Sean Payton, and just being a good coach was an onside kick here in Miami that took 3 minutes to unpile people, and a guy on his team had it. They scored, turned momentum, and won. Now, it's perhaps not as simple as that, but the line between good and a legend is really thin in this league. Pete Carroll was fired twice, 7-9, 7-9 in Seattle, and had Matt Flynn going into camp. It was all over. Fired for a third time. They passed on Russell Wilson twice, not a third time, and now Pete is a legend. Happens in the NBA, too. Doc Rivers was fired in Orlando. It's like 25 and 48 in Boston. And then he got KG and Ray Allen. Doc's now a Hall of Fame coach, and he's a legend. In the NBA, you got to land two stars, the right two stars. And in the NFL, you got to get a quarterback. Bill Belichick was fired in Cleveland because he couldn't and was 3-11 in New England before Bledsoe was hurt and a young, driven, willful, aspirational Tom Brady walked off the bench. Know this about Andy Reid. Andy Reid has the second best record in NFL history to Vince Lombardi off a bye. Vince Lombardi, 82% winner. He is also one of seven coaches to make the Super Bowl with two different teams. And he has never had an A quarterback. He finally does. The line between good and a legend, Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, who's your quarterback? Bill Belichick had a losing record in Cleveland and a losing record in New England. So if you want to take sides, who wins it, the coach or the quarterback? Take either. But just have perspective. This is the first time for the next 10 years, Andy Reid, it'll be a fair fight for the smartest offensive coach probably in the NFL since Bill Walsh.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Russell Wilson on The Herd today. What is going on?
Great to see you. How you doing? Congratulations.
You know, it is. I was talking to Jalen Smith of the Cowboys earlier, and he was a great Notre Dame player, got hurt. People forgot about him.
Yep.
And then he has to go into rehab. And I said, you went from Notre Dame to the Dallas Cowboys, big brands.
Yeah.
So I've told you this story one time before. I'm on my couch in West Hartford, Connecticut, and I never do this. And it's his first start for North Carolina State. Mm-hmm. And I text Kirk Herbstreit, who was at a game. I said, who's Russell Wilson? I've texted him twice in my life. And I watched you and I said, this is the future of the league. I don't know if you remember that. Then you had a great career. You go to Wisconsin. So you sit on the couch and nobody calls you first round and nobody calls you second round.
Yeah.
And you put up profound numbers for a conservative run-based offense. Was there a moment, even as an optimistic person, you thought, I'm not going to get drafted?
No, I believe I was going to get drafted. I just didn't know when. But the funny part about that situation about draft day, it was April 27th. I'll never forget it. And I'm sitting down, in my uncle's basement. He's a lawyer in D.C. And he's got this long old school white phone that's hanging on the wall. You know, the long
right.
The long cords and everything else. And you're supposed to call your cell phone, and you give them two numbers. You give them your cell phone, and you give them a house phone or a landline that they can call. And the landline keeps calling. Like I said, he's a lawyer, though. And I keep picking up the phone. I'm like, hello? And I'm thinking it's a team, hopefully. And this is the first round, second round. And sure enough, he's like, is Mr. Wilson there? I'm like, yeah, I think you have the right one. And it's not. they're asking for my Uncle Ben. And sure enough, I keep having to hang up the phone. But the funny thing is ESPN is showing me live. And so it's kind of one of those things. I'm picking up the phone, hoping that somebody's calling. No team is. And sure enough, come the third round, I'm sitting there and my phone rings, and it's a 206 area code, Seattle area code, and that's when I knew.
Now, did you feel, and you changed, it was really interesting, you changed the organization. So you go up into the Pacific Northwest. What did you know about Seattle? Well, you grew up on the other coast. What did you know about Pete Carroll, maybe USC? I mean, you were really going there, Russ, by yourself. It was Pete's a defensive guy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
it's different, right? It was a different environment.
I knew a few things. I knew, first of all, it rained a lot. Second of all, I knew that Microsoft, Amazon was there.
Okay.
I knew Pete Carroll was there, and I knew about this defense. And so those are the few things I knew. I didn't know anything else more than that. But what I did believe that was that I was going to be able to have an opportunity to play. And I love Coach Carroll. When he was coaching at USC and I was watching him, I remember I was a little kid, and he hates when I bring this up, but the Vince Young Texas versus USC right. football game, he's still bitter about that one. But it's one of those things that I remember Coach Carroll. I remember what he did in the inner city of LA
yes.
for all those kids. And I just remember how in touch he was with people and his players. And that always meant a lot to me. I think that was always significant to me. When I got there, my thing was I was going to be there early in the mornings. I was going to stay late and do whatever it took to get the opportunity to play. And I knew that if I just got the chance to play, that I could do it. And that's what it took.
I was on the East Coast at the time, and I tell the story that I was following you on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Goulet, you may have been my producer. I forget who it was, but I said, this Russell Wilson, he's texting at 4:30 in the morning in the off season. He's going to work out. And I remember saying, that's beyond, like, Brady. Do you think, because when you got there, Matt Flynn was there. Do you think part of that was you were trying to prove, okay, I may be an inch shorter than you wanted me to be. I'm going to prove to you guys how dedicated I am.
Well, to be honest with you, I've kind of always been wired that way. I've always been an early morning person. My dad used to wake me up early in the morning, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. When I'm, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, he used to hit me grounders, and I used to, hit, BP and do all that stuff. And the mental part of the game has always been really critical to me. And just, what I say to myself in between my ears. And I firmly believe when I'm up early in the morning and getting going and I feel like I've already started. And one of the things my dad used to always tell me when I was little, I remember growing up, was it's not just the other team or the other player you're competing against. It's the other kid across the country that you're competing against. And this is when I was in middle school, high school. And so that always kind of gave me a perspective that no matter what, somebody's up somewhere. And I want to make sure I'm doing everything that I can, because that's the one thing I can control, is how I'm thinking, the mental side of the game, and all that, and what I'm saying between my ears.
One of the things you've done that I find remarkable, and I've said this again, Doug Baldwin's undrafted. DK Metcalf's a rookie. Will Disley was a defensive end who they made a blocking tight end, and he works. You're like my stepson's a chef. You're like butter. You work with everything. DK Metcalf, he drops in the draft. Probably not a world-class route runner yet, but it clicked with you. It clicked quickly. So let's go back to that relationship, because it should be noted. A lot of great quarterbacks, if they don't trust receivers, they won't let it go. There's something happened in that relationship quick. What?
It was the work ethic. You can't replace that part of it. The time that you spend, the energy, the passion you put behind the game, all the hard work. I mean, we were getting up early in the mornings last summer during ESPYs weeks and during that whole entire week training at UCLA, getting up at, throwing at 5:20 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning at UCLA early in the morning when nobody's up and the sun's just coming up. And I think that, that drive to have somebody else do that with you, and work together on that. And there's places that he wants to go. He wants to be the best to ever do it at his position. And he talks about it. He's not afraid about it. He's very humble. The reality is you have to visualize that. You have to visualize success, and he definitely does that.
When you run, you clearly, Kyler Murray, you could argue Johnny Manziel, you're getting guys drafted now. And I always, we say on the air, it's very dangerous to look at Russell Wilson and go, yeah, my quarterback's 6 feet. He plays a little like Russell. And it's like, not really. When you take off on a play, I think we've discussed this before. Greg Cosell works for NFL Films. He says, you're the hardest quarterback. He said, I swear to you, they're designed runs. He goes, they're runs, but when Russell does it, it's almost like you're on a path. How much of your offense and when you move is off script, and how much is actually on script?
Well, I would say that, first of all, in terms of design runs, we probably have 5 to maybe 10%, depending on the week, of design runs for me. I would more say on this 5%. I mean, it's a lot of it is the scrambling part of getting open. I mean, these defensive lines and the players that they have, I mean, you got to be able to move in this game nowadays. When you're facing guys like who are going to play this weekend, for example, and guys like Bosa and Armstead, all these different players, you know, that can really get to the quarterback. Guy who used to play with me, Frank Clark, you know, guy who knows how to get after the quarterback. You got to be able to move. You see that with Mahomes and see that with other players. But I would say that I always tell guys there's going to be 10 to 12 plays that are going to be movement plays probably within this game. In every one of those plays, we got to make something happen. And so we pride ourselves on that because that's when, you know, we have the first to the fifth read and everything else. But once that's not there, that's when the magic happens. And I think that's where you make a lot of great plays.
Does Pete ever say, oh, Russ, does he ever get nervous? You know, he's a defensive coach. They're all conservative, Russ.
I think he used to when I was younger. I think, you know, because the first year he's like, is this going to work? You know, is this going to work? Is this going to, you know, be able to happen week in and week out? And sure enough, you know, I think you start experiencing it. And a lot of times, a lot of the great plays happen in those moments, you know, because they have no defense for it. You can't plan for it. I don't even know, you know, 90% of the time, I don't even know where I'm going. And so that's the fun part about the game. It's just the magic that happens. Guys like Tyler Lockett and how quick he's like a little race car, you know, he just gets right in and out of his cuts really fast. And the plays he makes, you think about the Rams game and how he's just scrambling, trying to find a place to go. And he goes to the back corner. We hit him in the back corner, just the creativity that it takes, you know, and really, the receivers do a really, really good job of that, and it makes it easy on me.
Now, you played San Francisco twice. You single-handedly, it felt like, beat them the first time. You gave their defensive line, Russell, you gave them some problems. Is there a little secret sauce to beating them?
Ah, man, I don't know if there's a secret sauce to beating them. I think that you're going to have to play great throughout the whole entire game. I mean, they really know what they're doing. They know how to get after the quarterback. I think Robert Saleh is one of the best coaches in football. You know,
why?
I used to be with him when he was in Seattle, and his attention to detail is phenomenal. I mean, he really knows what he's paying attention to. He really knows what he's looking for, and he's a great football coach. And he knows how to once he beats you with a play, he's going to try to bring it again at some point. He's going to try to make it look a little bit different, and he's really creative in that sense. But I also think they have great players, you know, and obviously guys like Sherm over there in the corner position. You got guys up front, and the defensive line is really what causes the havoc. And then they have linebackers that can get to the quarterback and run down guys.
Well, this morning you made an announcement.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I saw that. And would you like to share with our audience what that is?
Yeah, we're having a baby number three, you know. So, yeah, we were just
Let's hear it, baby number
excited.
Three.
Yeah, pretty cool. So we were just in, we just went to the Pro Bowl. We went down to Turks, and one of my hobbies is taking, you know, photographs. So
a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of them. So I end up taking a pretty cool picture of Sierra today.
How did you? So that you that took it? She's standing on the rocks.
Yeah, that's me. I took that selfie, and actually it was just kind of spontaneous. She was on the rocks walking, and I had just taken the main picture that she posted, and I was like, babe, let's do a selfie. And so sure enough, it was actually pretty cool just how. You know, how she was behind me and stuff like that. So end up posting that.
Is it hard to balance the dad thing and the football thing?
Not at all. I think that, you know, to be honest with you, it's more about the dad thing than the football thing. And I think that once you understand that life is really about the family and the people that rock with you and go with you everywhere and support you through all things. I think that's what the football part is the natural part that comes easy and you work at it and you get to do it because God gave you a gift to throw a ball and run around and make a throw or do whatever you get to do in life. But the fun part about family is that, you know, that's the part that's going to last. You know, this game, I hope that I can play another 12 to 15 years. But the reality is family is forever. And as much as I love this game and as much as you invest all your time and energy, there's no better time than just taking your kids to school and dropping them off and picking them up and going to little man's little league basketball or taking Sienna to ballet lessons or whatever that is. And so to me, those are the cherished moments that I've learned, you know, over the past few years, and especially being a stepdad. I think that I've learned that even more, what like real love is like, and to be able to love somebody that's not necessarily your own biologically, but to love them like they are. I think that's been one of the greatest gifts in my life that I've experienced in the past few years for me. So,
well, the NFL, Seattle, are incredibly lucky to have you. By the way, you have a product that I own, Bose Noise Canceling 700 headphones.
Yep.
If you do not have these, you're endorsing them today. Great on airplanes.
Well, they are. The noise canceling on the 700s is amazing. First of all, I wear them all the time. I love music, you know, and obviously I'm married to Sierra, so she loves music. We're always listening to music. So, but just to be able to travel and constantly, you know, put my headphones on and just kind of cancel out the noise. I always say ignore the noise. You know, it brings peace to my life. I'm always on the field pregame and walking around, and I'm constantly singing and playing music. I wish I could sing, but I'm constantly playing music in my head. And I just think that, you know, for me as a quarterback, to be able to, you know, simplify life, you know, and simplify the noise, especially today with social media and everything else that's going on and everything else.
Very toxic.
Yeah, you know, it can be. It can be if you let it. But it also can be good. And, you know, it's like, for example, we were just driving in here, and I was just reading Jeannie Buss's post about Kobe. And just reading, I know Jeannie, too, and I had the fortunate situation to get to know Kobe as well. And just, it can also be good, just to the social part of just knowing what people are going through and helping one another and praying for one another and even in tough times, you know. And so, just to think about, you know, this Kobe situation is pretty heavy for me, you know. I used to fly helicopters, I should say. I'm not flying them anymore. But, you know, for me, that's kind of been a heavy situation in my heart. And just, you know, really, you know, watching, you know, what different guys like Shaq, for example, and what he said the other day just kind of brought tears to my eyes, you know. And just
it was
so many.
Incredibly, I felt sick.
Yeah.
He was taken too early.
Yeah, you know, and I think that anytime you lose somebody, especially the magnitude that Kobe was to the game and just sports in general, and then all the other families, and then his daughter, you know, and you know, there's no real good in it. It feels like, but the best thing that we can do is cherish the memories of Kobe and what he was able to do for the game, and hopefully what we can also do is find a way to love the people that we haven't been able to love too good lately. You know, how do we do that better, you know, and not miss those moments, you know. And so, you know, life is precious. Breath is precious. You know, I thank God every morning I get to wake up and just be able to breathe, you know. And so I was a huge Kobe fan, you know. And I think
we all were.
I forever will be.
It's great seeing you.
Yeah, man. You're awesome. I'm always grateful for you. Joy, appreciate you too. One of the best shows on television. So thanks for having
me. Thank you.
Russell Wilson.
Go Hawks, baby.
Go Hawks, baby. Good stuff.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Two-time Super Bowl champ, national champs in college, and recently inducted, long overdue, to the Hall of Fame, my friend Jimmy Johnson, who I've learned more football from since I've worked with him for 5 years here at Fox Sports. And last night we were at a great party, and you were kind of like the MC. You run every party we're at anyway, Coach, so you were great last night. Let me ask you, when you took the job at Miami, the Hurricanes, so it was a good program. I mean, Howard Schnellenberger, but it felt like you took it to a different level, and it was polarizing. Did you like being a little bit of a villain?
Well, I don't know that I was a villain. Maybe I was a villain to some of those teams that we beat by about 40 or 50 points. But, I mean, we had fun. Obviously, we had great players. But, you know, when I took over the program, they had graduated 9 defensive starters. You know, and so we had to bring in some young players. And we recruited extremely well. You know, obviously, you win a national championship, you're going to recruit good players. But it just kept getting better and better and better. And I talked to Michael Irvin about it last night. You know, Michael said, you know, a lot of people were criticizing us, and a lot of people were saying that maybe we had too much swagger and we were too cocky. He said, but Coach let us play. He said, Coach said, hey, I'll take the heat. You guys have fun and win games.
By the way, I know a lot of former Hurricane players. I love them. I mean, from the Ed Reeds, the Ray Lewis, Michael Irvin. You know, that was always the myth, like, it's just renegade. But you had told me before, you guys ran a pretty tight ship.
The one thing that they'll all tell you, we were not a highly penalized team. And I said, listen, you celebrate all you want. You have as much fun as you can have, you know, but don't taunt the opponent. Don't disrespect the opponent. Don't give me a 15-yard penalty. Because, you know, if you give me a 15-yard penalty, you're going to be on the sideline. So, but to have fun, enjoy the game.
So you then get a call from a former college roommate, Jerry Jones, to go to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, in the NFL today, we see all these college concepts in the NFL. Were you worried that your college concepts wouldn't work in the NFL?
No, I knew that we were going to win games. You know, we actually, Bill Parcells talked to me about it. We brought in a coverage there with the Cowboys, four across and what we call a double switch, a two invert. And nobody else in the league was running it. And Parcells, you know, told his players, you know, Phil Simpson, he says, hey, they're running that college coverage. And Parcells, you better learn that college coverage because these guys know what they're doing. I talked to Belichick about it just this year. He said, you guys, nobody in the league could figure out what y'all were doing in the secondary. He said, there's two or three teams try to run it now. You know, they do the four across, but very few of them really do the two invert the way we played it, especially with the linebacker involvement. He said, you know, Belichick said, we try to run some of it, but you got to be totally committed to it. So it was different, and teams had a problem with it. That's why we were number one in the league in defense.
By the way, you struggled early in Dallas because you didn't have any players.
Right.
Was there ever a moment that you didn't think it was going to work?
I think we were just so dumbfounded. You know, that, you know, first of all, you know, we'd lost two regular season games in 4 years. Then we went 3-1 in preseason, and we said, hey, this is going to be easy. Well, it wasn't easy. But, you know, you look at it, Tom Landry was one of the greatest coaches of all time, yet he had three straight losing seasons. They were 3-13, so there really wasn't a lot of talent there, and we had to do something to get more talent. But we felt like we were going to win. I mean, even that 1-15 year, I told our guys, I said, listen, I told you at Oklahoma State to hang with me, we're going to win the national championship, which we did at Miami. I said, I'm telling you right now, hang with me, we're going to win a Super Bowl, which we eventually won a couple of them.
By the way, you can't win without a great quarterback, and you've told me before, Aikman may have been getting beaten up. He went to Oklahoma, transferred to UCLA, but
right.
You knew really early he was it.
I was in his home when he was a sophomore.
In high school.
I tried, and he was going to come to Oklahoma State. And then at the last minute, the last weekend, he changed his mind and went to Oklahoma. So then I went to Miami, and he was talking about it even last night. He said, well, if I'd have gone to Oklahoma State, you left and went to Miami. You'd have left me there. And then when we played him, we played Oklahoma, we broke his leg. And so I called him again. I said, hey, transfer to Miami. And he went to UCLA. And then the third time, I said, listen, I'm going to draft you. You can't walk away from me.
And it ended up being a great marriage. You're very close today. He'll be one of the speakers, I would imagine, at your Hall of Fame.
Yes, and in fact, you know, Troy's going to be my presenter and actually do the video at the Hall of Fame. And then Terry Bradshaw is going to actually put the gold jacket on me. So the two of them, two great, great quarterbacks, two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, will be involved in putting me into the Hall of Fame.
Here's the moment when it was announced on Fox. I was watching with my wife. I got very emotional. It was one of those moments in my life. I've had probably 10 of them, goosebump moments. Here's Jimmy getting a surprise induction.
It's my great honor to tell you that you're going to be the 328th
Whoa!
Hall yes! of Famer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And your legacy is going to be in Canton, Ohio forever.
In that
forever.
Moment,
congratulations.
What did you think about?
I wasn't breathing. I was shocked. I mean, in fact, my wife Rhonda says, you didn't have any breath. You couldn't speak because the whole time he was talking to you, you were just dumbfounded and standing there, not breathing. Then I tried to talk and I couldn't talk. I didn't have any air.
You know, it's interesting about this. Jimmy, you could have kept coaching. I talk to you now and you could keep coaching. Did the lifestyle, you work so hard, was it burnout? Why did you leave?
Well, when I was with the Dolphins, my mother passed away, which was really, really tragic for me. And then my youngest son was battling some abuse problems and was having a rough, rough time. And when I went to mother's funeral, I just said, you know, my two sons played football. You know, my oldest son played at University of Texas, you know, on a scholarship. I never saw either one of them play a game. And I said, you know, I've missed so much with my family that I need to get with my family and, you know, bring them together. And I will tell you this, my son Chad and his fiance, they came in last night. My son Brent and his wife Belinda, they're coming in this afternoon. The relationship that I have with my family right now, my wife Rhonda's coming in this weekend, you know, is the best it's ever been. We have a ball. We talk to each other all the time. We visit one another. That never happened when I was coaching, because I was a coach that I had to do it all the way. You know, even after I got out, people said, well, why don't you be a consultant? Or why don't you come be a general manager? You don't have to be here all the time. And I said, if my name's on it, I'm going to be working around the clock every day, 12 months out of the year. That's the only way I know how to do it. So it was either all in or all out.
Bill Belichick comes down on your boat once a year. That shows the great respect he has for you. What do you think when you look at Belichick? Like people, I'm into coaching, and people told me a long time ago, they said, listen, Jimmy is the personnel guy. Like Jimmy can see players that nobody else can see. And I could argue Belichick hasn't been as good as you in the draft process. But what is it about Bill that you admire? Because he's largely now considered the ace, right?
You know, Bill is so good at so many things. He wears a lot of hats with that organization. He makes the decisions with that organization. What he is good with personnel is picking up free agents, players from other teams, and he utilizes those players. He's able to take a player that maybe wasn't that successful with somebody else, but he's got two or three little traits that he likes, and he'll use that player in a certain situation. I mean, there's a lot of players that really are very successful with Bill Belichick that couldn't play somewhere else. He is just a great, great football coach.
By the way, Jason Taylor had his critics, Zach Thomas. What is it? What do you look for? It can't just be combine stuff. Nobody thought Zach Thomas was going to be that. What is it? What is in your eye that you spot that others miss?
Well, I was talking to Brett Veach about it yesterday with the Kansas City team.
Smart guy.
And he was laughing. He said, Coach, I use your stuff all the time. And he said, your number one thing is, you know, hit me in the head with a hammer the next time I take a dumb guy. You know, and I want smart players. They get better and better and better. You know, my first four picks at the Dallas Cowboys, all four academic All-Americans. Troy Aikman, you know, Daryl Johnston, Mark Stemnoski, Tony Tolbert. They were, you know, smart players. Jason, you know, a highly intelligent player. The other thing is, I want a playmaker. Hey, Jason had as much an effect on the ball game, winning games. Don't forget about tackles, you know, strips, interceptions, fumble recoveries, running in for a touchdown. They're playmakers. The other thing, I want them to be a gym rat. I want them to love the game. I want them to love competing. I want them to be passionate for it. I want them to be hard workers. And the other thing is, I want them to have character, because you can't win with bums.
Are great players easier or harder to coach?
Easier or harder to coach now? Is that what you...
A great player. Is a great player easier,
yeah,
or is it harder to
well,
coach?
Well, if they're a great player, it's because they work at it. I mean, it's much harder to coach guys that are not real good. But if they're not real good, they're not going to be around very long. You know, you get a great player. I never had to get on to Jason about working hard. I never had to get on to Zach Thomas about preparing for the game. I never, you know, had to say, hey, guys, you know, pick it up. You know, in fact, I relied on them to set the standard for the other players. You know, those great players, hey, Troy Aikman, he was as hard a worker as we ever had.
I know.
And I said this about Zach, and Zach, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. He may be the most coachable player that I ever had, ever in college or pro football. He worked at it. He was at the facility studying tape. That's why he was such a good player. And, I drafted 16 Pro Bowlers. And if Zach goes in, they'll give me multiple Hall of Fame players at two different franchises. I think that's why I went into the Hall of Fame, as much getting players and drafting players as winning playoff games or Super Bowls.
But it's interesting. All the social media today, players can be distracted. Does that make, if you look today and you went right back in, Do all the same principles still work?
Yeah, I think so. You've got to adjust some. You know, I talked to Andy Reid about it a couple of days ago, and you've got to adjust. The social media thing would bother me, but by the same token, I look at some of the players that have problems with social media. They're the same players that are knuckleheads. I mean, really. I mean, I don't see these smart players getting in trouble on social media. It's usually the knuckleheads, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
Right, right. I think I do. No, fair enough. Jimmy Johnson is joining us. So when you watch football, can you watch and enjoy the game? Or are you looking at the hands of the guard? How do you watch a game?
I watch games for enjoyment. I watch games for strategy. You know, how an offensive team's attacking the defense. How the defensive team is attacking, you know, the offense. Any other thing, I think I pay more attention to clock management, to the management of the head coach. You know, I've told a lot of head coaches get into a trap of letting their offensive coordinator and their defensive coordinator run the show. And I told Manny Diaz, I've talked about it to a lot of head coaches. You know, the offensive coordinator, he's there to try to score points.
Right.
The defensive coordinator is there to stop them. Anyway, the head coach's responsibility is to win the game. So that's why, you know, with Dan Quinn, with Atlanta, with the Super Bowl, he's got to put his foot down and say, hey, wait a minute now. You know, hey, we're going to run the ball. We're going to run the ball, and then I'm going to kick a field goal or let them have it. You know, I'm not going to be throwing the football, you know, in that situation. We got the game won. I mean, there's a lot of times that the head coach doesn't step in and say, okay, hey, you run it. Or tell your defensive coordinator, don't blitz now. You know, let's play zone. Let them work it down the field. Let's take time off the clock. You know, let's work our timeouts this way. That's the head coach's responsibility, to manage the game so that they can win.
Jimmy Johnson, just
the
great
best.
Seeing you. Absolutely love. Congratulations again.
Well, thank you. It was a great emotional moment. You know, after 40 years of coaching, it's great to be recognized.
Yeah. Well, you were by us long before that. Thanks, Jimmy.
All right,
Jimmy Johnson.